Welcome to Simply Scottish. I'm Andrew McDermott, your host. Today, we mark the 275th anniversary of the Battle of Culloden. We'll speak with Raoul Curtis Machen, Operations Manager at the Culloden Battlefield Site in Scotland. He'll discuss how he and his team care for the memorial and what they're doing to fight for its future. You'll also hear some beautiful music that illuminates the battle and the Jacobite struggle. Let's continue listening to our opening music. This is Isle of Lewis piper and flautist James Duncan Mackenzie with a song called Tormod. Simply Scottish is available on all major podcast platforms, so listen wherever it's most convenient for you. Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Audible, Amazon Music, Spotify, iHeart, TuneIn, etc. You can also follow the show on Facebook and Twitter and be the first to know about new episodes and chances to win Scottish music. A quick hello to some listeners who have contacted me recently. Rick enjoys listening from his home in Portland, New South Wales, Australia. Rick, my family has a soft spot for Australia. My mother taught in Sydney in the 1970s, and we went back later to live for a time. Both my sister and my youngest daughter have names inspired by the Aboriginal languages of Australia. And Simply Scottish has aired on Cairns FM, 89.1, in Queensland. Anyway, Rick, great to have you as a loyal listener in New South Wales. Leighton and his wife Gloria listen to Simply Scottish in Fruitland, Idaho, in the United States. They fell in love with Scotland during a visit there in 2018. Highlights include the Edinburgh Military Tattoo and Dunvegan Castle on the Isle of Skye. A warm hello to you both and to your whole family. Thanks for listening. This podcast is a labor of love. My payment is hearing back from listeners. So what about you? Drop me a line at andrew@simplyscottish.com. Tell me where you're listening and what your Scottish story is. That's andrew@simplyscottish.com. Up next, our interview with Culloden Battlefield Operations Manager Raoul Curtis Machen. First, I'll give you a bit of background on the battle in case it's new to you. This year marks the 275th anniversary of the Battle of Culloden. The course of British, European, and world history was changed at Culloden on the 16th of April, 1746. A ferocious war had come to Scotland, dividing families and setting clan against clan. It was here that the Jacobite army took their last stand to reclaim the thrones of Britain from the Hanoverians for a Stuart king. At this time, civil war was a constant threat as Scotland, Ireland, and England struggled to find a way to live and prosper together. Under extreme pressure, the Scottish Parliament accepted an Act of Union in 1707, combining the parliaments of Scotland and England. Three major issues now divided Scotland: the Union, the restoration of the Stuarts, and the dominant form of Protestantism. Several risings followed the Union of 1707. The Jacobites fought to restore the exiled James VIII as king and were led by Prince Charles Edward Stuart, James's son, who landed in the Hebrides in 1745. George II's government army, led by the Duke of Cumberland, George's son, was equally determined to stop this happening. In spring 1746, the Jacobite Rising was in trouble. The decision to return north from Derby, rather than press on to London, had marked a turning point in their fortunes. Charles was heading to meet the Duke of Cumberland's troops in the Highlands, but the army was not at full force, and food and money were in short supply. In contrast, Cumberland marched his troops from Aberdeen in good order. Morale was high as they camped at Nairn on the 15th of April, Cumberland's 25th birthday. He gave his soldiers extra rations and drink in celebration. Rather than risk a pitched battle in their weakened state, the Jacobites agreed on a final desperate plan, a surprise night attack. This could have been a brilliant strategy. Sleeping government troops would have been no match for the Jacobites. In reality, as the hungry and exhausted Jacobite column stumbled along in the dark, their progress was too slow, and they had to turn back. I'll let Scottish singer-songwriter Callum Mackenzie-Jones tell you the rest of the story of the battle, in song. After that, our interview with the man who manages the battlefield today.
Was the 16th of April, 46 was the year, led across Muiron Mountain, the rock ran clear, the clansmen did gather, exhausted and cold, side by side they stood boldly, the young and the old. Unfed and outnumbered, armed with broadswords and knives, Charlie's brave tartan army said goodbye to their wives. To fight Cumberland's army of privileged men who were paid for their legions and dressed up in red. 70 miles to Nairn and back, with no food or water when they were attacked. They marched on Culloden with tears in their eyes for Bonnie Prince Charlie. They fought and they died. As they charged down the glen, ill prepared to attack, there was many a man, can he wouldna come back. For but 45 minutes, the brave battled on in a fierce bloody struggle, their kilts ripped and torn. 70 miles to Nairn and back, with no food or water. Attacked. They marched on Culloden with tears in their eyes for Bonnie Prince Charlie. They fought and they died. Then the Duke gave the order to slaughter the brave on a cart, send no quarter, no man's life to be saved. The wounded and dying, killed by bayonet or knife, left behind grieving mothers, sisters, children and wives. Today the cairn to remember them stands proud and tall, shows that we still remember how our clansmen did fall. And the mystery flowed over the moor as a constant reminder of the battle for shore. Today the cairn to remember them stands proud and tall, shows that we still remember how our clansmen did fall, and their blood lies forever in the the soul I love the more, as a constant remainder of what our man did endure. 17 miles to near and back, with no food or water when they were attacked. They marched on Culloden with tears in their eyes for Bonnie Prince Charlie. They fought and they died.
Culloden was the last pitched battle on British soil. In less than an hour, around 1,300 men were slain, about 1,250 of them Jacobites. The aftermath of the battle is considered by many to match the brutality of the battle itself. Over the weeks that followed, many Jacobites that managed to escape the battlefield were hunted down and killed. Hundreds were also imprisoned or transported to the colonies for life. Homes were burned and livelihoods were dashed. Charles himself evaded capture for 5 long months, crisscrossing the Hebridean Islands until Flora MacDonald famously aided his escape back to France. He would never return to Scotland. The British government quickly followed up with a series of punitive laws against Highlanders and their way of life. Feudal lords and clan chiefs were stripped of judicial and military powers. The wearing of tartan by Highlanders was banned, except as a uniform for officers and soldiers. The bagpipes were curtailed. The Gaelic language was marginalized by officialdom. The ancient clan system suffered irreparable harm during these years, and it continued to deteriorate after the government cleared the way for outsiders to acquire much of the land in the Highlands. In what became known as the clearances, new landlords began replicating agricultural models employed in the lowlands, evicting thousands of families, burning cottages, and establishing large sheep and cattle farms. Facing starvation and disease, many Highlanders migrated to the Scottish lowlands or to Canada, America, or Australia in search of work and a new life. Today, I'm speaking with Raoul Curtis Machen, operations manager at the Culloden Battlefield site in Scotland. Raoul oversees the care of the site and the running of the visitor centre. He's going to talk with us about the fight to protect Culloden, as well as the events that are commemorating the 275th anniversary of the battle. Raoul, thanks for joining me today.
No problem, Andrew. Good to speak to you.
I thought we could start with the battle itself for a moment. In this episode, I give listeners some background on the Battle of Culloden, the historical context, the major players, and some explanation of what the Jacobites were fighting for. Could you give us your own insight into the historical significance of the battle and why it was a turning point in Scottish history?
Sure. Battle of Culloden was a major turning point. It was a pivotal moment in not just Scottish history, but UK history, history of Europe, history of the world. It was a snapshot in time of when there was such global power games going on. The attempt by the Jacobites, you could see it as an attempt by France to invade Britain through the back door, if you like, coming down through Scotland, which they weren't suspecting. It was an attempt to grab a basic empire before it reached its fledgling stages. The trade routes were just opening up with America and further west. So for France at the time, fighting tooth and nail against England, against Spain, you had all these different power struggles going on within Europe. Culloden represented just the last roll of the dice for the Jacobites and the French to try to get that power, make a grab, make a dash for the prize. And they lost. And the tragic way they lost flattened them pretty much forever. It was such a crushing victory. And the treatment, the brutal treatment afterwards throughout Scotland and the crushing of Highland culture pretty much stopped any further attempts. But looking down the line, I mean, you particularly look at what happened in the States, for example, and if it had gone the other way, then potentially the American colonists wouldn't have kicked off. You might not have had the American Revolution. America could look entirely different to what you see today, as would UK, as would a lot of different European countries. It's fascinating. It endures, I think, because the what-ifs still live in people's minds.
Tell us a bit about your day-to-day role at the battle site and visitor centre.
Sure, sure. As operations manager, I'm kind of responsible for the whole lot. It's a big, big landscape that wants to go back to being a woodland again. We've gone to great lengths to try to conserve it the way it would have looked in 1746, which is that heather, heathland, boggy, difficult terrain, but not covered in woods like nature wants to keep doing. And we get about 300,000 visitors. The battlefield itself is open 24/7, so I've got to make sure that the footpaths are clean and accessible, the car park's working, all the physical logistics, the toilets, all that stuff. We also have an international award-winning shop, which won a great award. In fact, we beat the New York Met last year for our product and the quality of our displays and everything. So we're really proud of that. That made more than £1 million in 2019 pre-COVID. Then we've got the cafe. I've got about 55 staff going throughout the summer. So I've got a core of about 15 to 20, and that mushrooms during the main season with all our seasonal work. We have scheduled ancient monuments on site with the grave markers and the cairn. So I've got a responsibility to make sure that they're maintained. And we're under threat. We have these planning applications that at times surround the site, and they're all modern houses and pretty inappropriate style of development. So a lot of my job is now spent trying to fight those and trying to protect the site too, fundraising for it, marketing the site. So busy.
What are some of the challenges of caring for a war grave and national memorial like Culloden?
Yeah. It's a big challenge. We have to tread very carefully. I joke with the staff that if we sneeze at Culloden, it gets in the local papers, because everyone's got an opinion on it. Everybody loves Culloden, but they also, it's a very serious site because of the tragic nature of the events there, and the fact that you can still feel it when you visit the site. It still resonates. It means people have a massive stake in the place, so that whatever we do with our interpretation, we have to be very careful. We expressly try and keep a balance. You know, there's a number of myths about the battle, that it was Scotland versus England. That's wrong. There were Scots and English on both sides. That it was Catholic versus Protestant. That's wrong. That's another myth. There was a hodgepodge mix of religions fighting. And the Jacobites and the governments, with the British Army, we represent as a red colour. We've got the Jacobites as a blue colour. We make every effort to tread an even line, treat both sides equally, and do not appear at any stage to favour either side. And it's a challenge, you know. People, I regularly come across people who've scratched out words they don't like, and they might not agree with it in their personal version of the Battle of Culloden, and they'll scratch a word out on our interpretation plaques on the battlefield. So it's tricky. It's tricky. People leave flowers. Yeah, they express themselves.
Can you describe a few of the artifacts visitors see in the exhibits?
Some of my favourites are the Brodie sword, which was a broadsword that was made for Bonnie Prince Charlie. And it's just a stunning, stunning sword. It's got Medusa's heads and all sorts of symbolism in the actual hilt of the sword. I've been lucky enough to carry it when it was getting cleaned and photographed for research purposes. We took it out the display case, and it was one of those moments where the thing courses with power in your hands. It was an amazing artifact. That's a prime thing for folk to see. We've recently developed a new collider case, which is an experimental way to interpret museum artifacts, and we have Charles Edward Stuart's letters in there. So these were letters that the prince wrote after he'd lost. And they're full of kind of anger and blame. He's throwing blame around that if it had been another way, he'd have won. And he's asking King Louis for more money to try again. And it's kind of desperate, but they're brilliant because they add that depth and they give you an insight into his character. And you just think, wow, he really was driven right to the end. You know, he'd been hunted across Scotland, managed to escape, and still wanted to come back and try again. And then we've got the cannons and the mortars and the swords, the wooden targe shields, the kind of armories, things that you would expect to see in a battlefield museum. So it's a big mix.
I visited Culloden Battlefield many years ago and personally felt that powerful, visceral sense of place as you stand in the middle of the moor.
Mm.
How would you describe the experience of walking and being present at the site?
Mm. It's powerful. It gets you in your heart and your mind and soul. I've worked on hundreds of heritage sites. I've worked for the National Trust. I've worked for Historic Scotland. And I've never known a site that's got such a powerful sense of place. I've seen people come off that field in tears when they reflect on just what happened on that day. I think it's a really powerful collision of a massive historic event and a tragic historic event with huge cultural significance for what happened afterwards, the eradication of Highland culture, the Scots diaspora, the Highlanders being spread to the four winds, and quite a lonely, windy, big open landscape that allows you to absorb and it extends your mind across to the Murray Firth and across to the mountains. And that combination it's a powerful thing. That's how I define sense of place. It's when those things collide and they resonate in people's souls, wow, it packs a punch.
I understand that there have been a number of threats to the battlefield in recent years, including housing and holiday developments. Can you give us an update on that and how the National Trust and other groups are fighting to preserve Culloden?
Sure, yeah. It's becoming a bigger part of the job, and it's really frustrating. We're actually at the moment calling on the Scottish Government to strengthen the statutory protection in law for battlefields, because as things stand at the moment, there is no statutory protection. The council's got a conservation area designation, but again, there's not a lot of teeth behind that. Historic Environment Scotland has got its battlefields inventory, but that's not statutory. There's no legally binding protection in there. And what these developers are doing is they're just around the edges of the battlefield. They're hitting us with these applications for big developments. I mean, the holiday village was 16 holiday cottages on stilts and a cafe restaurant, street lighting, new road, the whole lot, which would have a massive impact on the battlefield. And when we fight these things, we have to look at every time we look again through the history, through the documentation, we've got to make an assessment of how much fighting actually occurred on that part of the field. Was it significant, or was it really just a part of the landscape that maybe wasn't part of the fighting, but nonetheless could have been part of these key views, in which case we fight to protect? What frustrates us is that often we'll get support from stakeholders, from the council and Historic Scotland and others, and even then, once an application's been rejected, the developer appeals and he'll tweak a few things, and they appeal and it goes forward again, and we have to keep track of it and make the deadlines to object again and make sure that we've refreshed our arguments. And even the third time they can appeal, and it goes then to the Scottish Government. And that goes to a reporter who nobody's voted in. Their reporters are just appointed by government officials. And it's ultimately up to the government to decide. And every time you have to refresh your arguments, you've got to marshal your evidence for what you're trying to say. You've got to put it into planning speak so it's relevant to whatever laws govern the planning system. And sometimes things get through. We've already had the shocking development of View Hills, 16 five-bedroom modern executive-style houses. And from 20 yards beyond the cairn, you now see these white gable ends, grey slate roofs. And it's that shatters that magical sense of place that I just spoke about earlier. And that's a tragic decision. You know, we all said no to that, but the government reporter came in and the government said, yeah, okay, yeah, why not? And you just got to think, surely there's a better, more firm way we can protect the site that's so important. You know, and Inverness, it's been the fastest growing city in Europe now for a while, and nobody wants to stop its expansion. You can't, but there's a lot of land in other directions. There's a lot of ways that Inverness can expand without turning the battlefield into a smaller version of Central Park if we're not careful.
Tell us about the Culloden 300 initiative.
So we picked 300 years after the battle, which is not that far away. It's 2046. And we thought, okay, what type of development and where might be acceptable? What sort of vision of what do we want Culloden to look like and the surrounding landscape in 46 years' time? And it's been really interesting because we interviewed and surveyed more than 3,000 people in 2019, before COVID hit. And there was a crystal clear, strong response from everybody that it was vital to protect it. There was anger that it wasn't being protected. But also I detected this assumption that it was the political powers that had to protect it. You know, Britain's not known for its protesting population, really. We're a reserved bunch, and the Scots particularly are quite reserved when it comes to this. But there is a lot of anger simmering underneath. And I think the expectation is in the leadership. So government, council, key stakeholders like us, like National Trust for Scotland, Historic Environment Scotland, but the communities themselves. When we actually, we held town little community hall events as well, where we got viewshed and wireframe images to actually show people what developments might look like. And we had some great conversations with people, and they are switched on and they're very alert to the potential threats. But how you galvanise them to physically do a protest march or anything like that, I'm not sure we'd see that. I'm not sure. We get a lot of online surveys. We get up to sort of 10, 20,000, sometimes 50,000 and beyond. So it's there. It's just hard to galvanise it.
What is the cultural significance of Culloden today?
Huge. Absolutely huge. It's as much about the battle, but the aftermath, Highland culture. What I'd like to do is commission some original music to commemorate the battle and the aftermath, to make it into more of a cultural venue. So we have more live music events. We perhaps have festivals of Highland culture, crafts. We have already a good partnership with Burgess Bagpipes, local but top-notch traditional bagpipe makers. They come and play on a regular basis on the battlefield. I think we have to look at stronger designations, look at World Heritage Site status, perhaps, because of its cultural and social significance. We look at strengthening the existing designations around Culloden. And we also look at the fact that we only own just under a third of this battlefield as the National Trust. So there's more we can do to maybe set up long-term partnerships, to maybe explore acquiring more land to protect it. You know, you've got to look at what the most effective ways are going to be for the long term. Partnerships are great, but you've got to also think about, well, when people change their minds, what's then going to happen? So we've got a vast amount to do. We've got a very successful visitor centre that was built in 2008. I don't know, when I first went to Culloden as a tiny kid, that wasn't there. And it was a windy, difficult sell to a little kid about the Jacobite story. Now we tell the story in a really brilliant way, but the centre needs a refresh. We've got new technology coming on streams. We've got a recent 360-degree tour which came out, and that's proved extremely popular. So we can look at ways of interpreting things like the Bodhi Sword, maybe in digital ways, where we can go more in depth about some of our artefacts. It's exciting. I think it's just as alive today as it's always been. And I think it's got a bright future. I spoke to some Chinese tour groups just before the lockdown in 2020, and they got really excited about putting Culloden on their Highland itinerary. And when I asked them about the direct relevance to them, they said, no, this is a universal story. This is battle. This is suffering. This is cultural quashing and aftermath and military occupation. These stories, it's irrespective of your culture, these are appealing and they're strong. So I think we're going to quickly get back to our massive visitor numbers and huge following. You know, we've also got Outlander, which is growing from strength to strength. The Inverness Outlanders are broadcasting live on the anniversary next Friday. That's phenomenal. You know,
how can my listeners, wherever they are in the world, help to protect the battlefield and promote its significance?
Well, that's a great question. And we've just launched a massive fundraising campaign to protect Culloden and conserve Culloden. In the States, the National Trust for Scotland USA Foundation are running it as the Culloden, as the Conserve Culloden Fund, and you can access it at the NTS USA Foundation website. Our UK one and in Scotland is National Trust for Scotland Culloden Fighting Fund, and that's at nts.org.uk/donate, or just search Culloden Fighting Fund and you'll find it. And we're just asking for your help. I mean, it is a real battle. And we are up for it. We are winning. We've won a series of results against the planners this year alone. We're turning around, we're conserving the battlefield. We've got conservation grazing projects now live on the battlefield. We've got some ideas for how we're going to renew the centre. Your help would be a brilliant, brilliant assistance to us just to realise our ambitions for the site, you know, and come and see it. Come and see your money being spent and see how we improve things and keep telling this vital story. And thanks for the opportunity. It's an honour.
Raoul, I appreciate your time. I've really enjoyed our discussion, and I'm proud of the work you and the National Trust are doing to protect such a valuable part of Scotland's history.
Thanks, Andrew. Take care.
That's it for this episode of Simply Scottish. To learn more about Culloden and how you can help protect its future, visit simplyscottish.com for links to Culloden websites and resources. Listen to more episodes by subscribing on your favourite podcast platform or going to simplyscottish.com. And don't forget to reach out and let me know that you're listening at andrew@simplyscottish.com. We'll close with a new release from Iona Fife called Scotland Yet. It's her rendition of a song written and released by singer-songwriter and former Battlefield Band member Davy Steele, who released it back in 1998, a year before the Scottish Parliament reconvened again for the first time since 1707. You can hear the optimism in the chorus of the song. The choice will be upon us soon, to set our destiny. I'll drink a toast to Scotland yet, whatever yet may be. I'm Andrew McDermott. Let's connect again soon for another celebration of all things Scottish.
Simply Scottish is hosted and produced by Andrew McDermott. Show content, copyright, Simply Scottish Media. All music is used with consent of copyright holders. Continue your Simply Scottish experience at simplyscottish.com. Thanks for listening.